Welcome back to the 27 and to the Boldcast, your AMS2 YouTube podcast. I'm Steele, and with me as always is Oz. Last week we discussed some pretty heavy topics: crashes to desktop, their effects on league play, problems with AI, and our general thoughts on the viability of AMS2 in its current state. But this week we're back with some optimism. We'll be discussing last month's development update, some exciting new features coming online, some interesting forum discussions, and if we have enough time, getting into some discussions about cars themselves. Recent development update, patch 1212 came out. Oz, pretty exciting stuff. They introduced a couple of new features. They're going to be introducing a new car, the 1974 Porsche RSR, and also with the changelog, a plethora of fixes. And believe it or not, we touched upon a lot of these problems in the last podcast. So the first thing that I wanted to point out was the crashes to desktop. Have you seen all of these fixes that they've been making in the changelog?
Yeah, so it's good to see those fixed, as we talked about last week. But it's good to see even more of them. Like, there were still a couple that they found relating to saving a championship and having to do with French localization, and also, well, just a few like random CTDs, but I mean, that's already three less.
Yeah, they're discovering them like sort of one at a time. It's sort of just like, it looked like it was ad hoc to me. Like, they had, I think, between 1210 and 1212, I think they had something like 5 or 6 CTD fixes of just, you know, random areas. But they also were working on the custom championship mode and fixing a lot of the things going on with that. And it was surprising to me, but not surprising at the same time. It was surprising that they just devoted an entire update, like a monthly update, to fixes, basically. But what wasn't surprising is that this is sort of Rise's MO, is that they come across a lot of problems and they resolve it right then and there. Did you read the entry about the tarmac surface wet pit issue that we discussed? Did you read that part?
Yeah, so that was definitely interesting to see that it was indeed like having to do with material. So
yeah.
Because it's a complicated simulation of different surface materials, and that probably all have a different different levels of grip depending on how wet it is. So it must have just there was a cliff there with some material, clearly, where...
Yeah, I think so. I think it was clearly just like the numbers were just completely off, and it was just something that might have been overlooked. And, you know, the community reminds them, you know, this is an issue, and they, you know, prioritize these kinds of things. But all of these fixes altogether, I think, are really important, because getting rid of all of these little bugs is just sort of part and parcel to people's enjoyment to the game. Like, that way, if you make a mistake on track and it's your fault, you can live with that. You know what I mean? But like with the bug fixes, it's sort of just like, so it's extra frustrating because you can't complete what you've probably practiced for and worked on. But let's move into some of the features that they're introducing with the development update. And the first one I wanted to talk about was the multiplayer lobby session settings. Actually, there's two of them with regards to multiplayer. There's a part where the multiplayer screen is going to have a lot more detailed information. And then the second part of that was the lobby host is able to make session changes with the active lobby still ongoing. So that is something that's completely new as far as I've experienced. And I know that the most annoying thing about having a lobby, if you wanted to make a change, say get rid of pit stops or something, you would have to close the lobby. You know what I mean? Have you ever been in like a situation like that, like where you had a lobby and then it was just like people wanted something changed and you had to like scramble and everyone had to leave? Like, I know leagues do it all the time, right?
So only the past year have I like every week almost experienced this. And so this is a massive, 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 massive improvement to, did I say massive enough times? Massive improvement to how we can run, for example, let's plug Moody Cheaties Discord again. Because he yeah. hosts and his minions like Donk, for example, they host the Saturday races, Saturday Centaculars. And we have been doing AMS too a lot, and which is, if we wanted to do, I'll give you a few examples. Sometimes we do one where we might do the same track with different cars, because we usually do like 3 to 4 races. So we might do Formula V at that track, and then maybe hop onto some into some other car for the next race, but keep the same track, or it could even be the different track. But so far, we've had to just like abandon the lobby, right? Because you can change that sort of those sort of settings. Or if we wanted to, if we discussed in the Discord voice chat, should we go for thunderstorm for the next race, or just random weather, or anything like that, or maybe like,
oh, let's just about weather,
yeah. Because you could, and you could also do something like, could we just make the quali 5 minutes, or there's like anything like that. Like stuff happens in these casual races where you might want to change some of the tinker with the settings between races, but that was just never possible with the old concept or the old interface. Now it seems like it's right. possible. I did hear that not. You cannot change absolutely everything. I think there were a few things that you can't change. But even right. so, those might be something that could be added, or they might be something that's like, you might sometimes want to change those. But if this is like 90% of the stuff that you want to change between races or after creating the lobby, even just like creating a lobby and realizing, oh, I forgot to add random weather. You would have to abandon it. Right. Like tell everyone, okay, I have to create it again. It is a big, big improvement.
And one thing is having everybody on Discord that you can coordinate with. It's a whole other thing if it's just like completely public and people are just in the lobby. And the thing that that came to my mind was, one, like say you start a lobby and no one's joining. Like say you want to do like a 90-minute practice, but you don't really want a 90-minute practice. You're just in there practicing, you know, 10-minute quali, 10-lap race. You know, as people join up during that 90 minutes, you know, you could later, you know, you get to the quali, get to the race, get through that. And then with the second race, you can reduce the practice time to, you know, 15 minutes, something more reasonable that people would be willing to, you know, go through. You won't want to subject everybody to a 90-minute practice.
Oh no!
For a multiplayer session, so that's a vibe. That's a possibility for someone that was interested in hosting or just wants to get some practice in. You know, set up a lobby, do 90 minutes or, you know, an hour of practice. Wait for people to trickle in, and then get the session started. Then you can just, with all the same people, the next race you can switch it to 15 minutes or something more reasonable that suits better more people's schedule. I thought that's a fantastic way to keep lobbies together. I think it's just, it's an amazing, you kind of forget how, that's a huge quality of life. You kind of forget how important that kind of thing is.
Let's also not forget, because we talk about, and rightly so, AMS2's online concept, or just like the lack of like an online ecosystem or whatever you want to call it, because you don't have that much going on in the
right.
I mean, it maybe got better, but like in general, that's what we've been criticizing, is that there's not that much going on if you just like look at the list of lobbies. But let's not forget, compared to, I'm gonna say, the majority of Sims, let's not forget how easy it is to create a lobby, pick any content you want, and tinker with all of the settings right there and there, and just like create a lobby, even if it's just for your friends, or if you want to like try, maybe people will join it, whatever you want to do. But you can create a lobby so easily, and this is and this improvement really, really like enhances that concept rather than anything else.
Right.
So that concept of just let me create a lobby in 5 minutes, and just that by itself, I think, is a fantastic multiplayer feature, and it is a multiplayer concept in and of itself, I think, because you don't have to think about multiplayer as this thing that, well, someone somewhere sets up a server. I don't know how to do that. It always seemed a bit difficult. For example, I've tried to do that with, I'm quite technical to my work, and I've been tinkering with computers for my whole life. But even so, when I looked at, I'm not gonna name the sim, but I looked at it and I'm like, how do I set up a server with this? And this could have changed after that, but I looked at it and I was like, what? Like, I couldn't understand any of it. You had to, like, I don't know, I don't even remember. You had to do some really, like, weird things, and it wasn't well documented. And contrast that with just pressing a button in the interface, create a lobby.
Yeah,
it is, like, I think that's easily overlooked. Like, that this is something that we desperately needed, I think.
Right. And I think it's important for continuity. It's important for continuity too. Like, obviously people are going to stick around more if there's more flexibility with the lobby itself. So, like, if someone does start a lobby that you might not like all the settings, you can go and join and be like, hey man, can you change this? Can you change that? And
yeah,
make it more suitable to more of the people that are in the lobby or joining the lobby to make it a little bit more popular. Can, like, we not have thunderstorms? Can we just have, like, a normal race? You know, the guy might be able to switch it to just dry conditions and, you know, more people will show up. But continuity is important. I think it also, I think this is a developmental step, because right now, I think without the multiplayer ranking system or the rating system, people are it's just too easy for people just to abandon a lobby. There's no incentive to stay. So, like, yeah, if you make it so that they want to stay because it's more conducive to, you know, their schedule, or, you know, make more people happy, and then lobby will exist longer just because of that. And then you add the rating system where, you know, you get a rating hit if you leave in the middle of a race, which is, yeah, it's going to happen. That's the way it's going to work. You know, people are going to stick around more. They're not going to take that rating hit. They're going to stick around more and then try, like, they're going to get into the next race, and they're going to be like, hey, I lost 10 rating because I spun out, you know, but I stuck around. Let's see if I can get that 10 back with this next race. I think I'm faster than a lot of guys in this lobby. So this is all important to getting people, you know, hanging on inside the multiplayer lobbies, and it just would lead to more people logging on and seeing more active. I think it's just going to be like a snowball effect, honestly. These kinds of things now, and then the rating system in Q3, I think they're all coming together. Okay, so let's move on to the big content release. This was a surprise as far as I was concerned. No one was predicting a 1970s GT, but they're introducing the 1974 Porsche RSR 3.0. I believe it's naturally aspirated. And it's an exciting new feature because this, I did some research on it, and this was one of the iconic early 70s GT racers. You probably know a little bit about this era because you've probably touched upon it in your other sim racing. Have you? Have you driven 1970s era cars as much?
Yeah, I have. They're like one of my favorites in AC, for example, is the... I forget what the packs are called. I think they're called TC Legends, but then there's also something like ACL Legends or something. I forget right. What the other one's called. But there is, I don't think there's an RSR there. I'm not sure. But there is a 911 from that's close to this year. And it is one of my favorites, definitely, in, like, out of all the cars I've driven in AC, is that one, because it's... It's crazy in a positive way.
Right. It's just so, it's sort of like mechanically so basic, but at the same time, I think it's got like this visceralness to it. When I watched some of the YouTube videos of the real life cars, when I was looking it up, immediately the sound of the car was familiar to me from my childhood when my dad used to take me to the track. It just sounded so 1970s, just muscle. Like, it just something that like would just echo through you. Like that kind of like, you'll never forget the sound of these race cars if you're at the track for the first time. And that is the sound. I don't know if necessarily it was the car that I heard when I was a kid. I can't say it was, but they certainly sounded very similar. I saw there was a familiarity to it there. But I also saw some other interesting videos about this Porsche in particular. It was groundbreaking. The person discussing it said that, this was funny, I thought it was the wide tire technology era of GT racing. I guess the Porsche RSR was the first to implement hyper wide rear tires.
Yeah, they so are. Look at the. Yeah, they are in the. They're starting to be. If you look at pictures and even the dev update on Races Forum, if you look at the rear tires, they're almost in the category of no longer measuring in centimeters, but like measuring in meters.
Meters. Yeah.
How many meters are these tires?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But that picture, I thought, in the dev update does not do the tire justice either, because I was looking at some of the pictures of some of the other – there's actually three 1974 Porsche RSRs, believe it or not. I don't know if you knew this, but
– Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was in a rabbit hole one night when they announced it, and I just kept falling through it. There is a turbo – 2.1 liter turbo, and then there's an IROC, I think it's a 3.0 IROC version. So they're all subtly different. I think the IROC versions were built just for IROC, but the turbo, the 2.1 liter turbo, the reason why it was a 2.1 liter, this is just a trivial fun fact, is they were in a racing series, and the regulations were you could be 3.0 if you were naturally aspirated, but if you weren't naturally aspirated, if you had a turbo, you had to have like a, you know, there's some kind of mathematical reduction in, you know, in the engine capacity, I guess. So in essence, the turbo needed to be a 2.1 liter. So that, if you look up the 2.1 liter turbo, the tires on that, and then compare it to that picture on the dev update, it's like, wow, like it's even more. So it's a crazy car for sure, just from the tires. But yeah, I was going to say that one of the drivers I was listening to, he was saying that the car grip and the balance of the car was unbelievable. He said the grip was unbelievable. You could slide the car through the corners and it was just balanced perfectly. And that's one of the reasons why it was so popular and so successful. It was a winning car, obviously, but he said that it was a lot easier to drive. So I'm hoping that the AMS2 version is not like some kind of animal that is going to be uncontrollable for everybody. You would probably have more experience with those or be better than I would at those. I'm hoping more for like a casual, you know, really, really good grip, nicely balanced car.
I'm thinking it'll probably be the usual 911 thing where it doesn't necessarily turn in that well, but once you get on the power, it'll turn in well, and you'll get right. So much acceleration out of the corners. And like you said, now I'm expecting it to be really fun to like to slide around. And those old, I believe those old slicks, those are probably, I don't know, but those are probably some kind of cross-ply type of situation where the grip or the beak grip or optimal slip angle with those is kind of vague, so it'll probably be really just like soft to slide around, but still have lots of grip, and that will mean that if you have any sort of oversteer in you, like this tiny oversteer, what would it be like? Well, if you have any oversteer spirit in you, let's say, this will be your spirit animal.
Yeah, I guess. That makes sense. Speaking of slicks, there's a new problem that has come out that I've read a little bit more and more. Maybe it's sort of just like a oversight. I believe it just has to do with just the balancing. It's between the slick tires and the wet tires, and how much grip the wets are now affording players in wet conditions that are converting to dry conditions. Apparently, the wet tires, in comparison to AI pace, it gives the human player a much bigger advantage. But then when it turns to dry, the wets continue to be consistently fast through the dry transition, almost to the point where, you know, you change over to slicks at the same time and the wets are still faster. Have you come across any references to this phenomenon that's sort of popping up here and there?
I haven't experienced this myself, but I saw a discussion about this having to do with the P3 tire treads. So with the P3, it had to do with that. Could be other cars as well. But with those, the wets wear about 1 second, anecdotally, about 1 second faster than the slicks.
And, in the dry?
In the dry, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
And that seems to me like one of these challenges with the complicated tire model, where if you have ever seen the Project Cars Seta tire model page, or they had a page years ago, they still have it there, where they explain all the different kinds of variables that go into a tire in the Seta model.
Yeah, I've seen
tire model. Yeah. But also the audience, if you've never seen that, we could probably link to that in the description. And it's the reason is probably that there's probably some type of variable mismatch or something where the wets are both good at they can take it was with the live track system. I suppose there's some kind of like wetness level, like how thick is the film of water on the track.
Right.
And then the tire tread, the wet tire tread can break that level. It can take that film, whereas the slicks cannot, obviously, because they don't have any tread. And or in grooves. But on top of that, for some reason, they also have really good tread for grip. But they do also have some differences in tire degradation and how quickly they heat up from just, you know, cornering. And also different kinds of slip angles, I believe, like and how, you know, soft they feel underneath and through the wheel. But for some reason, it is, at the moment, the situation is that the overall grip you get, overall cornering speeds with some tires
in a very short span of time, I should say, because I think the grip falls off, and if you overheat them, they're obviously going to fall off just due to heat as well. But for a brief period, that wets are faster.
There was some discussion about that too, but it seemed like maybe if you do a 15-minute race, it doesn't matter within that
really
time span. But however, always should have to keep in mind that is this if someone is really pushing the car, and is this because the wets might be easier to slide? What if you slide the slicks? Like, what if you push the car with the slicks? Which tire will actually be able to take it, when which one will heat up more? Now, I'm not saying that this everything is well, because it still sounds like age the wets. I mean, I don't really actually have any facts to back this, but it does sound like there's something wrong there.
No, there's definitely something wrong.
Yeah, but I'm still not sure that the wets are actually faster in a sprint race, even if you just if you put someone pushing the slicks versus pushing the wets, because even just going 1 second faster each lap could mean you could have to push the car out of corners so much that the wets might actually heat up so bad that they just start sliding around and you lose basically all confidence.
Do you think it's something that people were going to try to like use as a glitch advantage in TT, knowing all this?
Yeah, for sure. That is a risk right now, and then we
Well,
will.
hopefully they fix this issue before people start like setting perpetual times, and this has to be ironed out, because if it's something where someone can put on a pair of wets or a set of wets and do a TT that's a second faster, then and then they're not resetting the time trial leaderboards after that, that would be detrimental to
Yeah.
so they literally have to get this fixed now. So anybody that's thinking about the wets, using that to your advantage, I would think twice about it. It's just going to be a novelty. So if you're serious about AMS2, I would just stay away from it and just learn how to drive on the slicks. It would be just something to be fun and ha-ha, look at how fast I am in the wets. But I wouldn't bet on it staying that way at all. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about, moving into some of the recent forums discussions that I've seen. There's actually, within the past couple of days, there were two different threads. One that was titled something along the lines that AMS2 is too easy. Okay. Now wait for it. And then a few days later, another thread that was called AM is AMS it's too is A AMS2 too easy to spin. Now, the forums being the forums, this is the kind of thing that you would expect to see. I think both posts were, I'm not going to conjecture about who posted them, or I'm not going to name names, but to me, they sounded like people that were relatively new to the game. I know historically people have had issues with how grippy GT3 cars. So the reason why the too easy to spin thread kind of confused me was because that was in reference to the GT3s, which everyone was complaining about how grippy they are. So, like, did you read either of these two threads at all?
I did
Or come
see.
across any conversations about the AMS2 is too easy, the edge of grip, or is it too easy to spin? That's the first time I've ever heard it's too easy to spin, to be honest.
I have seen the too easy to spin thread, I think, but I have also seen this being thrown around for so long now. Someone somewhere will always say that something has too much grip or it has too little grip, which
Right.
try to get some constructive feedback out of that. I'm not saying that there is probably something that could be done to the grip levels, but like, which way?
Right. So I think the biggest elephant in the room is Jimmy Broadbent. He's, saying that one of his major complaints with AMS2 was he couldn't spin the car, spin the Group C in third gear or whatever it was, in the rain.
Yeah, this was in the
And
wet.
he was perturbed at that. He just felt like the car should have had been more finicky on the throttle. But at the same time, I think that goes along with his overall impression that the game was too easy, because I think he caught a slide and a DPI in one video as well. But I know for a fact that, looking at the setups of the cars and the methodology of how they're presenting these cars, they all have the same kind of a signature to them, each setup for each car. And one of the primary signature items of each of the setups is that they have relatively soft springs compared to the fronts. And then also they have relatively stiff front rebound damping compared to, a more balanced setup. So when I'm looking at that nowadays, because I've touched upon so many cars, it's one of those things that I just go in and automatically think to fix. And having a soft rear spring package is going to give you extra grip on corner exit. It's just by nature, that's what it's going to do. Now you're also going to have heat imbalances because of it, and that's what ultimately what happens with some of the default setups. You're going to have problems with the car balance wise, and if you slide, it's going to make it, if you have a soft setup and you slide, it's really, really bad for tire heat. They also, the tire model itself is extra forgiving and extra grippy. Now I think one of the recent themes also, I think this is from the Ehrman side of the equation, is that he was driving GT3s and he thought that they were going too fast around the tracks. Do you remember any of those videos that he's put out? Like the GT3s going around like Laguna Seca or something?
I haven't seen the video, but that's definitely something that something that I have noticed. And myself, for example, the
I think it was in the context of realistic track times, whether or not Animus 2 has realistic GT3 track times.
Yeah, but the thing about that is it's a very simplistic way of looking at it. I mean, you can look at it. We can discuss it. I'm just not sure if it's that relevant, to be honest, because it's with the live track conditions and different with all the things that could affect your overall grip levels. I think simulating that is more interesting than simulating the exact same lap times, which because the way you get those lap times could be so different and also very unrealistic. So
right.
I would rather not look at the lap times too much. Now, having said that, the GT3s are multiple seconds faster at Spa, for example. So, and these are, there is still a bit of a mystery as to which spec or regulation these GT3s stick to. Now, it is my belief that they stick to the Brazilian endurance regulations, which are less strictly regulated. I think the cars have more, I believe they have more power, but I'm not sure. At the same time, I think they use, I'm not sure which tires they use, but even the tires could be different. These are very, 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 these are really important details to consider.
Yeah.
When you are pushing a car, is it actually the same car? Are we talking about, because GT3 is a car type for sure and a class, but even if you get some like amazing tires under there, for sure, I believe you could probably get multiple seconds at Spa.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple of things you just mentioned. You said a little bit more horsepower and extra grippy tires. And it seems like, you know, there's nothing in my mind that tells me that any of the tires that are modeled in AMS2 are supposed to be modeled after real world tires. They're not Pirellis, they're Rizellis, I guess you could say. So like they can model them any way they want. Like, so I know for a fact that the soft tires for the GT3s have like 6 minutes of, you know, roughly 6 to 7, 8 minutes of push, you know, freshness. You can push on them and have a ton of grip. And then after like a 6 minute threshold, maybe about 3 laps, I should say, the freshness phase is off and you're now into the normal grip phase, which is probably, you know, 10-15% less grip. But then that phase lasts for a very long period of time, upwards of another, you know, hour. Like the car, the soft tires will last an extremely long period of time. And I remember Nemesis and I were testing Porsche GT3 exclusively, and we were kind of, you know, all in a league competition. You're kind of like, okay, do we need to do a tire change? I mean, it's always a question and conversation. We have to check out the degradation of the tire, the wear. And more often than not, the tires would last, you know, pretty much for a full tank. Like, so you're not having to stop and change for tires halfway through a stint with, you know, so you basically could get a full stint, full tank of gas, and the softs, depending on how hard you push, how many lockups you have, the softs would last. Now, I think I've never actually come across a point where I've tested the softs till they fell off. We all know that there's like a drop off at the end of the life of the tire. Now, I've heard that you can get to 100% wear on the screen. So like the green tire is like completely depleted, but shortly thereafter, you're going to see a significant fall off. I would have assumed that like if you saw 25% left on the tire, then you're in some type of third phase, which is kind of like worn phase. And that's what I think it should be, to be honest. But it's so rare that people actually get the tire to that point. But ultimately, my point being is these cars may be faster than the realistic, you know, real life times because of the horsepower, because of the grip. And, you know, if you're just judging a car in TT mode, you know, in the first three laps, and TT mode is fictitious track grip levels, you know, there's no racing line. It's just like 100% grip across the entire track. No dirt, no dust, no marbles, no nothing. Yeah, of course you get the car out of shape. It's going to want to kick you back into shape. I think that's sort of realistic to expect that. It is kind of a false scenario to have a fully gripped in track across from rumble strip to rumble strip, you know? And then the freshness of the tires is just compounds that. So that's what we're seeing in the game. But the thing that was funny to me was it's too easy to spin. And the other thing I want to note about how easy it is to spin the cars is because I know for a fact that if you push these cars too much on their default setups, after three laps, when the nexus between the freshness tires falls off, the rear tires are overheating because the natural, you know, setup is coming into play, and maybe you're pushing it a little too hard, you're a little bit too comfortable on the, you know, those fresh softs, you get them maybe, you know, 10, 15 degrees hotter than the front tires. That and the freshness falling off, and then boom, lickety split, you're backwards. That's what I think that this guy was talking about when he was saying it was too easy to spin. He wasn't talking about TT mode. He was talking about, you know, lap 3, 4, 5. They can get really touchy if you're not paying attention to your rears, right? So
that's definitely true, and I have run into that, and that's just something that I keep in mind these days. Is the balance between the front and rear temperatures, is it within? What was your rule of thumb was something like
5C.
5C, yeah. If it's beyond, for me as someone who I don't mind having the car get out of shape every once in a while, I can deal with that. But if let's say my fronts are 85 and my rears are like 97, that's already something where it only takes one slip and then they're beyond 100, and then I'm just like fishtailing all over the place. I can deal with that, but then you might wonder why is this going on? And it's definitely not easy to drive the car when that happens.
Yeah, you're in a danger zone with 12C, yeah. I mean, for sure. And the thing I think it's important to point out is there's got to be some way for you to bring the tire back.
Yeah.
You know, you have to manage, you have to recognize what's causing the rear tire temp issues in the first place. And if you don't know that, if you don't know what's causing it and you're not paying attention, you know, your skill can go only so far. You're just going to keep pushing it and pushing it over the edge farther and farther and farther until it's uncontrollable.
Something you can do about that now, because they've been tinkering with the traction control curves or whatever they called them. But ever since they introduced the traction control presets, where it goes from 1 to 10, where 10 is most traction control and 1 is least and 0 is off. Or maybe maybe off is off. I forget. But it used to be that 10 was useless because it just cut your throttle all the time. What you can do now, I noticed, is if you put it to 10, you can drive around with the throttle like pretty carelessly, I think. So what you could do is, but it will still accelerate. But if you get any amount of, if the rear goes out even a slight bit, I think it cuts the throttle immediately, and you'll notice that it becomes this frustrating thing where if you're trying to go fast, it won't let you, and you like bog down at mid corner if you get on the throttle too much. Now this might be a good strategy for bringing down rear tire temperatures if you ever get them over if you get right. if they get out of hand, because you have to manage them pretty aggressively, because it will only get it is a slippery slope, definitely, because once they start slipping, there's a slip more and more and more, and they'll just get hotter and hotter.
Now, traditionally, I try to make a car setup that's balanced enough so that you can maintain around 5C with just, you know, minor driving style changes. You can push a little bit, you know, comfortably push in a racing scenario and still maintain 5C, and you're good to go. But I can definitely see, I can envision traction control, especially for GT, you know, GT4s, GT3s, being almost like part of a routine for drivers. I don't know, have you ever played the F1 series at all?
I have, yeah.
The F1 series of games. Okay, so I remember when I played several years ago, if you watch some of the esports drivers, they were changing their brake bias almost every other corner, changing their fuel to rich and lean and back and forth like several times a lap. There's so much activity that these top level esports drivers were doing. People were saying, F1 drivers are saying you don't really have to do that in real life, you know, changing the deployment of the ERS system like 3 or 4 times per lap and back and forth. But the esports guys were doing it. And I'm not saying that AMS2 is going to have that level of involvement with traction control where you're just changing it for every corner. But I think people need to start getting used to traction control to the point where they have to have it key bound and they have to figure out how it works. There's an audio tell that I've noticed as well. So, you're not only going to feel the car bogging down when the traction control kicks in, but there's going to be an audio tell, which I think people are going to be familiar with from ACC, because I think ACC has an audio tell as well.
At the moment, the noise it makes with some of the cars is the same as the rev limiter. So it's a weird noise where it's that noisy,
it's like actually, noisy like noise. In the Corvette, it's like a buzzer. And other ones, it's a little bit different sound. But yeah, ultimately, traction control, I think from the top end of the scaling, you as a player are going to have a lot more control about how much wheel slip that you're going to be allowing. And to be honest with you, I think there is maybe a school of thought out there that traction control is sort of like it's sort of like a crutch to keep you from spinning out too easily. And I disagree with that mentality. I think that traction control can prevent you from spinning if you have a heavy foot, and maybe it is a crutch if that's what you need to keep the car on the track. But I think the primary use of the traction control is to keep your rear tire temperatures in check at places like Long Beach, where, you know, you can easily get them, no matter what your setup is, you can get the rear tires to be like basically frying if you're driving with any pace. So I had no problem with setting traction control to like 8 or 9 around Long Beach after a couple of laps. And then when they cool off, you know, set it back down to 7, 6 to try to get some more pushing in. I think that sounds like that's what they do in real life, probably. And it's completely realistic. It adds another dimension to, and I remember we talked about having the dynamic nature of tire management in AMS2. This adds another element of control to that, which I think is fantastic, to be honest. I can't wait to employ it.
I hope we will get the actual key. I hope we can map those to I hope we can map TC plus and TC minus to buttons real soon. For now, only have the system that's inherited from Project Cars 2, which is you have the off, low, and high. And if you actually want to play with the amount of TC, you have to go to the in-car management system, and you can bind buttons for that, but you know, you have to be aware that exists, and it's clumsy to use that because you have to go through a couple menu steps to get to the TC. And I just hope with the with the fancy steering wheels we have these days, or, you know, even you're using your keyboard or whatever,
right,
that we could have some key that we could just press, and okay, now you have more TC, and press the minus key for that, and now you have less.
Right.
I wish we had that sort of system, like in ICC. I have some live follow-up, by the way, concerning Spa GT3 lap times. I don't know which series this is, but that's besides the point, because we talked about how GT3 times really depend on, you know, the exact type of GT3 that's used. So right. Apparently at near the end of last year, Vincent Abril, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, drove Ferrari, probably one of the newer ones, and he took pole in a cold morning qualifying session with a time of 2 minutes and 13 seconds. Now, doesn't that sound like Nemesis to you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is some sort of joke, because it's like cold morning qualifying. Well, I suppose it is possible. I mean, maybe it is the cold morning keeping the rear temperatures in. I mean, not the rear temperatures, but tire temperatures in check. But like two right. minutes and 13 seconds, that's actually really, like, if you dig into this, it seems like actually the lap times for a hot lap, that doesn't seem that doesn't seem insanely like
I'm
different.
I'm not at all surprised at that, because, you know, the regulations restrict these cars, or that Ferrari probably had full available horsepower. It probably had no ballast. There was no, like, nothing holding it back. That was just, it just went, you know, and like they just unleashed it. Like, so that's not surprising to me. These things are high performance cars. They're very fast. So I honestly think ultimately about the whole criticism about, you know, comparing sims to realistic lap times is sort of just like a dog chasing its own tail. At some point, it's just like a conversation just to have a conversation. Now, you can say, oh, well, look how realistic the game that I like is because the lap times are similar. But what does that mean? Like, does that mean, like, you could take, you know, 50% of the ACC or whatever game player base and then plop them into a, you know, a GT3 and they can do competitive? I mean, is that what you're saying? That, like, all these sim drivers can jump in and drive real cars that fast just because, like, ACC? Like, what are you saying? Why does it make a big deal, or make a big deal to people that are, like, pro their game? Like, oh, the real life car can do it in 215 and I can do it in 215. Are you saying that you are, like, that's where I think there's a certain, like, kind of disconnect where of reality. Like, you're trying to get too close to reality, but you're kind of forgetting that you're not in that world. You know, this is sim racing. Believe it or not, you're not actually probably capable of driving the Ferrari at 213. Even if you are Nemesis, who knows? Maybe he could, but I know most players probably couldn't. But yeah,
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Nemesis, would you go karting with Nemesis? How do you think that would go down?
I don't think he would take his foot off the gas, and we would never catch him. I think he's. I've rarely gone karting in my life, and I remember when I did, I was trying to drive like racing lines, like trying to find the best racing lines on those weird tracks, and I just remember getting smashed by people because I would be going wide to, in a corner entry, and then trying to exit wide, and people were just going straight for the apex like an arrow. And it's like, okay, you just ruined every single one of my corners was ruined because of it. But then, oh, that reminds me, did you ever see that video from Carlos Sainz when he was in a kart? It was like he was a GoPro camera on his helmet, and he went from like last to first.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I need to.
You should look it up. Carlos Sainz go kart. It's actually like impressive. And you know the people that he was driving, they knew what they were doing. And he was just, he was so precise. It was just so impressive. Like, these guys in F1, they are really impressive drivers.
Yeah, they can balance the oversteer and the understeer, which is, karts are absolutely insane. And they just do, like, if you try to look for any sort of balance in a kart, it seems like you won't find any sort of balance with those. They're always doing something unexpected, or not unexpected necessarily, but like they're just always up to something. So
yeah, they keep you on your toes, and I can understand why. I 100% understand why, you know, countries that have a tradition of karting, you know, from young generations onward, yield the best open wheel drivers. I think anyone who's anyone in open wheel racing, IndyCar, F1, and all the sub series, they have to have some type of karting. They're definitely not like coming from dirt track racing, which obviously would filter more. It would be more suitable for a filter to NASCAR. So, but like, I don't think in the United States, they don't have that big of a karting tradition here. So it doesn't surprise me that in England, you know, it's taken much more seriously, or in Europe for that matter, it's taken so much more seriously that you have all of these, you know, the European drivers dominate F1. It's just quite obvious to me. In particular, British drivers, I've always maintained that British drivers have an advantage over all of the rest of us, is because when they're driving karts, like you're driving a kart, you know, driving it indoors or, you know, in dry conditions is one thing, but these Brits, you know, I think their country is in a perpetual state of rain, or almost raining or about to rain or just stopped raining, you know. So imagine having to drive a kart with like just changing conditions nonstop. So you can wonder where Lewis Hamilton gets his skills from, right?
Yeah, unless I'm mistaken, he's really fast in the wet as well. So
I would imagine.
So that's definitely true. In some countries, you just have, not that the conditions are necessarily insane, because you can, whatever the conditions are, you get used to that. But the problem is that they change so quickly in some countries, like the UK and also,
whereas you guys in Finland. You're in Finland, so you guys rally racing, man, right? Isn't rally racing big in Finland?
Yeah, rallying is big here. Yeah,
you guys have to drive in snow. That's mountains and snow.
Not mountains necessarily, but there's a lot of there's definitely snow is in some, like, it doesn't get that snowy in the south because of being near the coast and whatnot. But when you have snow and you have like good snow tires, the amount of grip you have is actually very surprising in a road car. The amount of grip you can get, yeah, with good snow tires, they really bite into the snow. Also, I'm not saying, and I'm not encouraging anyone to drive fast in the snow, because that's not a good idea.
Just try it out this winter.
Yeah,
take my Honda out in the snow and be like, I'm going to try drifting to work today.
Yeah. No. So, weird sidetrack.
Yeah, we're coming up to an hour, so I'm going to let everyone go here. I wanted to thank everybody for listening. We're going to be doing more Boltcasts coming up, but more immediately, the next Boltcast will be featuring the Nemesis 69 himself. I've already scheduled the interview for you guys. We're going to have an excellent podcast for you. As far as the channel is concerned, plugging away with builds. Coming up, we have the BMW M4. And then after that, the Omega 99. So I hope you stick around. Thanks for watching, and take care.